Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum. Celebrate the opening of I Saw It, Francisco de Goya Printmaker, with an evening of live music, art making, live model drawing, tours, and more. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Info at nortonsimon.org.
I'm Julia Paskin. Join me as I talk with NPR's Sarah McCammon about her new book, The Ex-Evangelicals, Loving, Living, and Leaving the White Evangelical Church. That's April 25th at the Crawford. Tickets at las.com/events.
From the Moen Broadcast Center, this is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Austin Cross, filling in today for Larry as he takes a very well-deserved break. A little bit later this hour, Facebook is making an Instagram for kids. It's kind of like the online version of the kids' table. But a group of public health advocates say the platform would be dangerous for children. We'll get into that, and also we will hear your thoughts. But first, joining us for our daily update on COVID-19 is Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. Doctor, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Austin.
Of course, so glad you could be with us today. The big news of the day, of course, is that vaccination appointments in LA County are now open to all people age 16 and older in California. So just right off the bat, Doctor, what are your hopes for the future now that eligibility has expanded in the state?
So my hopes for the future are really that more and more people go out and get vaccinated. I know that some people are worried given the recent news of J&J about all COVID vaccines, but I would say that all of the ones that we currently use are completely safe. There's been no safety signal. No one has died from Pfizer or Moderna. And in terms of my hopes for the future, I'm really looking forward to the day when everyone can get vaccinated at all age groups.
Well, how do you think the state will fare with its current supply of the vaccine?
Well, I think they're doing pretty well. I think that because less than 4% of our current supplies was due to J&J, mainly in part because J&J had a delay in manufacturing originally,
of course,
that we're not going to see too much of a decrement in what we were expecting. Of course, it's a bump in the road with J&J, but not necessarily falling off a cliff. I think production is going to continue to rise over the next few weeks with Pfizer and Moderna. They'll make a decision about J&J, and we're well on track to having every American have access to vaccine by end of May, as President Biden has hopefully said, which is, when I said every American, it's mainly every American above the age of 16.
Can I just say, it's so incredible, Doctor, because it seems like it was just last week when the shutdowns were first starting to happen. It was just the beginning of this long, long year of quarantine and pandemic. And 1 year later, we're talking about vaccines, three of them. I don't know. I still can't get over how cool that actually is.
I know, it's so super cool, and I'm just so inspired and positive about all the ways in which science is really accelerated to the point where you can really sequence that SARS-CoV-2 genome in a matter of hours, find the code for the spike protein, gamble on the fact that if you make the message for the spike protein, the antibodies we make will prevent the real deal COVID from setting up shop. It's just truly amazing.
My producer, Natalie, says, I guess it really was warp speed. And yeah, I suppose it was. Well, I want to ask you this, Doctor, before we get to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, because I know a lot of parents right now, they're anxious to know when their kids under the age of 16 might be eligible for the shot. That's under the age. Obviously, today is over the age. How's progress on those clinical trials? And when do you expect we'll be getting vaccines to kids?
So I'll divide the group under the age of 16 into two groups, because they will be getting vaccine at different times. The closest group that will be getting vaccines first under 16 will be the ages of 12 to 16. And now there's data from Pfizer for sure, already submitted to the FDA as an amendment to their original emergency use authorization, showing that not only is there no safety signal in that age group, that's worrisome, but the efficacy is really amazing. No kid in ages 12 to 16 got COVID who got the vaccine. And in fact, the antibodies were double the level of antibodies of young adults. So all good news. And the fact that it's an amendment and not a full new application suggests that the FDA will approve that in a matter of weeks. And then we're looking at that age group, early summer, midsummer, I'm hoping. For the kids under 12, those studies have just started in the last week or two. And that goes down to as young as 6 months of age. Wow. So that those results will have to first accrue data. And then, so I'm thinking by fall at the earliest, end of year for that age group.
Well, as usual, if you have medical questions related to COVID-19, we're taking your calls here. That's 866-893-5722. Again, 866-893-5722. We would love to hear from you. You can also tweet us at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. And I'm joined right now by Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. Now's the time when I want to ask you, doctor, about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to get the latest on that, because a CDC committee decided to extend the pause on the J&J vaccine yesterday, saying it needed more time to review. So what is that review process going to look like?
So ultimately, the question of the day for that advisory group is, should we use the J&J vaccine in this country? And most people expect that we will eventually. But I think more specifically, is there going to be an age and gender restriction to the vaccine and the way we are going to use it? Of course, in the US, we're blessed with the luxury of having many more doses of vaccine than our population. Operation Warp Speed purchase or pre-purchase more than a billion doses of vaccine already, banking on the fact that some of the vaccines wouldn't have worked. Turns out that most of the vaccines are producing amazing results. So they're going to have a surplus. So then they can have that determination, have enough evidence to say, well, whether or not we'll open it up back to everyone, or maybe we're going to restrict it to, say, for example, those over the age of 60 or 50, as is the model with AstraZeneca, a similar vaccine in other parts of the world. So I think that's what they're going to do.
I know it's early on. Sorry about that, doctor. I know it's early on right now, but could we see a day in the future where, because we have, you know, enough Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, that we might have a surplus of Johnson & Johnson vaccines, and that might be something that we would end up, I don't know, giving to another country or something like that?
I mean, certainly that is a possibility. But again, the J&J vaccine is so well positioned for certain groups in our society because, you know, it's one-stop shopping, one dose, don't have to come back for second dose, can be easily refrigerated, not kept in a deep freeze. So rural communities, vulnerable communities, college students, those are all folks who've been really tantalized by this kind of a vaccine.
Well, who do you think this pause in the will affect most of all, doctor? Who do you think this pause in the J&J vaccine, you know, it is a single shot, so it's just a single trip to your clinic. Who's going to feel this the most, you think?
I think, unfortunately, it's going to be our vulnerable communities and, you know, those who live in zip codes that are far away from healthcare systems, who are not plugged into the system, who don't have a smartphone or a mobile phone to really have the wherewithal to make repeated appointments, because the J&J vaccine was being used in a lot of mobile vans because of the easily transportable nature. And these mobile vans were going into these vulnerable communities. Even in the big mega sites, like in the Bay Area, the Oakland Coliseum was really predominantly aimed at minority populations, and it was using the J&J vaccine for many of these reasons. Just easy to give, one-stop shopping, don't have to come back for a second shot. So now all of that is, I think, going to be potentially changed for the future.
I want to put our phone number out there one more time. If you do have medical questions related to COVID-19, we're taking your calls at 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. Stacy from West LA says, when can a woman in the age 18 to 40 range who gave birth last month safely get vaccinated if the baby is breastfeeding? And does the doctor have a recommendation for which vaccine to take in this case?
Yeah, so for right now, for a woman under the age of 50, until we have more information, we can't easily give it now anyway, but I probably would not use the J&J vaccine until we have that fully sorted out. But certainly with Pfizer and Moderna, it should be fine. It should be safe. It's not a live virus. Again, it's only a message for a spike protein, so no live component, so therefore safe in pregnancy. And we've been getting more information that mothers transmit antibodies to kids like they do in other settings, good antibodies to protect babies when they're born. So in fact, some mothers who are vaccinated have been trying to breastfeed earlier because of that recent science showing that these antibodies are transferred to the baby through breast milk.
866-893-5722. Again, 866-893-5722. If you have medical questions, vaccine questions, we would love to hear them. You can also tweet us at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. Dr. Laura from La Cañada says, I have family in Mexico who got the first shot of Pfizer. Now, exactly 4 weeks after the first shot, they didn't get the second one, but then they all took antibody tests, and it turns out that they tested for zero antibodies. Is it possible that they could have received a bad first shot?
That's a great question from Laura. I think there could be two things going on. First of all, it would be great to get that second shot because it will increase the chances that you will get an antibody response. We know that people after the first shot with either Pfizer or Moderna probably have about an 80% chance of getting a response after 2 weeks after the first shot. But that increases to 95% by the second shot. The second shot also gives you probably more durability. So it may keep that antibody response on for longer than even if you got it after the first shot, it will go away. The fact that Laura's relatives did not have an antibody detected doesn't mean they didn't have a response. It could mean that it was early on, but if it was later on, she said 4 weeks after the first shot, then it could mean that there are other immune cells that have memory, like memory T cells, that are not captured by our current commercially available antibody tests. There are some companies working on developing, there have been one approved FDA test to look for T cells, not in common use yet, but this is the way in which we're approaching this. It's such, our immune system is so sophisticated, the antibody test we use now is very, very crude. It doesn't really necessarily pick up the fact that you've had a response or not.
If you've got questions, we can get you some answers, 866-893-5722. You can tweet us at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. Dr. Ellen from Huntington Park says, I got my first shot of Moderna yesterday. Can I lift weights and do cardio today? That's a good question, Ellen.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. I would say, if you can, you can definitely go ahead and do exercise and lift weights as long as your arm is not sore. In fact, it may seem counterintuitive, but by exercising after your vaccine, the sooner you do it, the better. You increase blood flow and potentially decrease the chances that you'll have a sore arm because basically the vaccine is administered into the muscle, not into the bloodstream. If you increase blood supply overall to the muscle, it just diverts the vaccine away from the muscle into other parts of your body. So it may, your immune system wouldn't just all zoom into your muscle, which is the reason for the sore arm.
I want to get you a question from Carla. And Carla says, Carla's in North Hollywood. She says, my close loved ones have been all fully vaccinated. And they want to get together as a family, but their 13-year-old obviously is not vaccinated yet. They've been very, very careful, of course, this past year when it comes to the pandemic. And they don't want to mess things up. So how careful should they be with this 13-year-old if they're thinking about getting together?
So if the 13-year-old is not at high risk for developing bad COVID, so doesn't have any congenital heart disease or malignancies or any comorbidities, then from CDC guidance, Carla and her family can safely meet the 13-year-old without protection, and as long as it's, you know, with one other household, and that is completely fine, because the reason is the chances of two non-responders transmitting COVID to each other in a relatively small group, most people being vaccinated, is going to be very, very small.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we have a whole lot of questions. We are going to answer them for you. And if you have some you'd like to call in and ask the doctor, you can reach us 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. You can also tweet at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Air Talk. I'm Austin Cross, in today for Larry Mantle, who is taking a much-deserved break. And I'm joined right now by Dr. Peter Chin Hong. He's infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. And we're taking your calls and your questions about COVID-19 and the vaccine. If you've got them, we'd love to hear them. 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722. You can tweet us at Air Talk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. I want to get to a question that I saw earlier, Doctor, because it really made me wonder about the timing of these things. It's from James in City of Industry. He says, I took my first shot 2 weeks ago, and he's due for his next one next week, but he just found out he has to go out of town for work, so he has to reschedule that appointment. So if James in the City of Industry got his second shot 2 weeks after it's supposed to be received, is that going to put him at a risk, or is that going to affect the vaccine's effectiveness?
No, and great question from James. Basically, you can safely extend the interval between vaccines from 3 weeks, as in the case of Pfizer, or 4 weeks in the case of Moderna, for additional 4 weeks or so, just given the evidence we have from the UK when they extended intervals, and people still seem to be protected. In fact, the interval may be much longer. And if you think about people getting natural infection from COVID, CDC guidance is they can wait safely for 3 months before getting the vaccine shot. So because we know that antibodies last from natural infection, which is less reliable than vaccine antibodies or immune response, for as long as 7 to 9 months. People are not going to say wait 7 to 9 months to get your second shot, but there's a lot more latitude than would be suggested by the trials.
Well, the doctor is in today here on Air Talk, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. We have a call right now from Mark, and Mark has a question about various shots. Mark, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. My question is, I'm on the Johnson & Johnson clinical vaccine. I got my shot December 4th, not knowing from Johnson & Johnson if it's a vaccine or saline. December 10th, I started getting sick. I got COVID. I was in the hospital for 5 days. So 2 to 3 weeks ago, I did get my Pfizer shot. And I get my second shot this coming next Wednesday. I asked to be unblinded, and they sent me an email yesterday that my shot December 4th was the vaccine. My question is, have you known anybody to get two different vaccines, two different manufacturers?
All right, doctor. So vaccines from two different manufacturers. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so that's a great question for Mark. In fact, that study is currently being done in the UK with two different manufacturers' vaccines to see if it still results in the same and durable antibody response. The biology suggests that it will be okay to get two vaccines. And I think not necessarily in the context that Mark is bringing, if you say you got a Pfizer, can you get like a Moderna as your second shot? But in terms of Mark, he is getting a full double dose of Pfizer. So he will get full protection from that, regardless of whether or not he got J&J before. In terms of a disadvantage, it's most likely not going to result in any, untoward effect or adverse side effects by the scenario that Mark painted. And first of all, Mark, I'm so glad you're better from COVID, and I'm sorry that you got sick and the sun is shining now, hopefully.
That was Mark and Lomita. And Doctor, it kind of reminds me of something that you and Larry Mantle had spoken about in the past, about researchers looking into the possibility of doing a little bit of a mix and match with the shots so that maybe where one is weak, another one might come in and supplement it. Do you know where things stand as far as that goes? And might we see some recommendations to maybe do that if you received one vaccine like the Johnson & Johnson vaccine later down the line?
Yeah, there could be a scenario. I mean, I think in some of the vaccines around the world, like in the Chinese vaccine, Sinopharm and Sinovac, they're not being seen as effective as some of the ones we're using here, Pfizer, Moderna, et cetera. So some of the talk is, when you have not so great of a vaccine, can you just get one dose of another vaccine that's better or different? So it's still a question scientifically, but biologically, you're doing the same thing with, no matter what you do with the vaccines, you're presenting a picture that looks like a spike protein on the virus, and your body is looking at that thing and developing antibodies against it. So no matter how you present that picture, the body is making the same repertoire of antibodies. So it shouldn't really matter what company gave you that vaccine, but I think we really need to study it. And if we have enough of the same vaccines, of course, we'll do that first, because that's what the studies was based on.
We have a few more questions for you, Doctor. But before we get there, I want to ask you about variants. For me personally, this is a major concern, but there is a variant in Brazil that's been causing cases to skyrocket there. And we've also been hearing about the South Africa variant. What do we currently know about the effectiveness of the vaccines that we have against those variants? And I guess the other part that I'd want to tack on to that is there potential that we might need to think about a booster shot in the coming months that could better help protect us against those variants?
Yeah, so in the world of variants, there are three categories: the good, the bad, and the ugly. Okay. Well, it's not really good, but the old COVID we knew so well for most of last year is kind of like the baseline. All vaccines, of course, work against it, and it has sort of like moderate transmissibility. The bad is like the UK B.1.1.7 variant, and maybe the California variant, and maybe the Indian variant as well. The reason why they're bad and not ugly is because all the vaccines work against these categories, even likely the Indian, although we're not sure. But they're very transmissible, particularly the UK B.1.1.7. And then there's the ugly category, and they're ugly because they just don't only have one superpower, which is increased transmissibility. They have another superpower, which is potentially evading vaccine efficacy. And that's why the South African and the Brazilian variants, P1, are so feared. Turns out that P1, the Brazilian variant, and the South African variant are fortunately not that common in the United States. And I don't think it will be. I mean, mainly because the B.1.1.7 UK variant is such a bulldog of a variant. It's so transmissible that it kind of crowds out everybody else in the field, even these ugly variants. So for right now, we're kind of okay, but the vaccines have variable power against them. I think the Pfizer and Moderna are probably going to be best against the Brazilian and South African, although there's less information on the Brazilian variant. And the J&J vaccine does have decent efficacy against the South African. That's why they were using it in South Africa. But now with the pause of J&J, that country is put into a lurch around using vaccines. So that's kind of the way they stack up with vaccines. We know that AstraZeneca doesn't work well, and likely Novavax, which hasn't been approved yet in the U.S., has reduced efficacy against the South African variant.
I mean, one thing about this pandemic, Doctor, is it's definitely shown us that the pandemic, it's a global problem. The coronavirus is an issue that if it's bad somewhere else, it could soon end up on our doorstep. And I want to ask you just a little bit more about that P1 variant, because some researchers say that that strain is 2.5 times more easily transmitted from person to person. After the United States gets through this chapter where we are vaccinating people and as many people as we can, anybody who wants one has gotten one, do you think that there's going to be a shift in focus, a shift in attention to looking at these developing countries and countries who maybe don't have vaccine programs that had been developed at such a rate as ours? Do you see us turning our attention to those so that we can stop the variants or stop more variants from coming there before they come here and cause a whole other problem for us?
Exactly, Austin. We are not going to make progress against this pandemic. And I'm not even talking about pandemic elimination or virus elimination. I'm just talking about controlling or squashing the pandemic unless we deal with global vaccine equity. For the reasons you described, every time there's transmission, there's going to be a creation of a variant. And we're speaking about these, you know, marquee variants today: South Africa, Brazil, UK, India, California. But what about the variants of tomorrow? They will probably have many more superpowers than the ones that we have today. Until we break that cycle of transmission, which is best done by vaccines, and we're not going to do that.
Well, we want to get you back to some of the listener questions. Monique from Laverne says, I have a friend who took the first jab of either the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine and refuses to get the second shot. How protected will she be, and can she travel with only one shot?
That's a great question. I'll answer the easier one first, which is, what's the likelihood of protection after one shot of Pfizer or Moderna? It's going to be about 80% 2 weeks after the shot, and potentially a little bit higher. When 80% is probably where it settles down in population studies in the real world. In terms of using it as proof for an immunity passport, it all depends on how people view that. It may mean that she may be okay, because again, if you compare 80% protection from one shot, it's similar to a 70% protection from another vaccine. But the question is, I'm not sure how long Monique's friend will have protection for given one shot, because again, the reason for the second shot is not necessarily as much for making sure you get protected, but also for making sure that that protection lasts for many, many, many months.
I'm Austin Cross, in for Larry Mantle, and our guest right now is Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. And I want to ask you another question, doctor, that came up. One of our listeners, and I just lost her name there because her name just scrolled up, but she's in the very same boat that actually I am, and that's that she had COVID-19 at the beginning of February, and she wants to know, should she get her vaccine now?
So that's a great question. The CDC says you can wait safely 3 months to get it. It's a complex question because it just has to do with how available is the vaccine in your area. And if you're getting an invite, can you give it up and then make sure you're going to get it again in the future? So that's one issue. From a efficacy issue, you're definitely protected, or likely, I would say, protected still from a February COVID, because it would last, you know, at least 3 months, but likely in the realm of 6 to 7 months or more. And then the other thing is, people who get even one dose of a vaccine after COVID recently may have be prepared for a little bit more side effects. They're all reversible. It's not going to be deadly, but at least prepare yourself that you may get some of these, you know, arm soreness, maybe some muscle aches and myalgias. Your immune system has already seen COVID, so it's just going to be very primed when that message comes to tell your body to make spike proteins. with the vaccine.
Got a question here from Jennifer from Los Alamitos. She says, I participated in an AstraZeneca study on January 11th. I received monoclonal antibodies for this year-long study, but I got the Pfizer vaccine a week later, and then I started to worry. So when I read the fine print on the AstraZeneca study, they said I should wait 6 months before I get the vaccine so the monoclonal antibodies won't interfere with the vaccine. So I'm wondering, she's wondering what you think about this and if you have any insight on what she might expect.
Well, that's a great point. So the idea is that the monoclonal antibodies, which are antibodies against COVID, will basically work against the vaccine because the antibodies are going to come to look at these little spike proteins being made by your cells that the vaccine tells it to make and just going to like neutralize them so that they wouldn't, then they can't stimulate any more of your antibodies. But the monoclonal antibodies, you know, I think 6 months is kind of giving you a big cushion of a window. And really the half-life of a monoclonal antibody should be in the order of, you know, 2 to 3 months. So, you know, any time in that realm should be okay. And 6 months was just being very, you know, is being very cautious. But again, you know, if you're getting a vaccine invite and you know you're going to get a vaccine and not placebo, as in a trial, if you're not blinded, it probably would, and particularly if it's a two-shot series, you're probably going to get, certainly if you don't get it after the first shot, you're going to get the full protection after the second.
Doctor, our time with you is running low, but in just about 30 seconds, I really want to ask, because this is something that occurred to me, and it obviously occurred to Carlos and Whittier too. He says, I've had the full round of Pfizer, both vaccine doses, and I've now had one of the Moderna shot in addition. So does the doctor think I should get the second Moderna shot for even more protection? So Carlos, going deep on those vaccines. What do you think, doctor?
That's definitely a deeper cut from Carlos. So Carlos got two doses of Pfizer and one dose of Moderna.
That is correct.
I don't think that Carlos needs to get any more. That's going to give plenty of protection. If the two Pfizer shots were like not part of a trial and he knew he got the shots, because they're all so effective. So I'd be very reassured with that scenario that Carlos paints.
Carlos, man, you covered, save some for the rest of us. That's Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. Thank you so much, as always, doctor. And I gotta say, I've heard you talking to Larry very often, and I'm a big fan too, so I'm just glad I get to talk to you.
And I'm psyched to talk to you too, Austin. Thanks for sharing, and I'm glad you're better from COVID too.
Thank you so much, and we'll all talk real soon. Coming up next, we'll be talking about Instagram for kids. Is it a good idea? Yeah, I'm sure you have some thoughts. Air Talk will be back in one moment here on KPCC.
Support comes from Ciclovia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclovia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclovia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.